This is Lightning Power Lunch with Dave Mishkin and Greg Linnelli on Lightning Radio.
Our first two periods was great. You know, we're doing all the right things, putting pucks when we need to, making plays, taking the hits we need to do to get pucks out. And yeah, it's good hockey.
As a goalie, you always want to weather the storm whenever teams are making a push like that. So yeah, just try to stay composed and make the saves that I'm supposed to. And yeah, just do my job. So thought I did it well. Thought, you know, obviously they had a lot of really good chances. So good to keep them at bay and you know, I'll give them a reason to keep pushing.
Yeah, I think we're, you know, our game's rounding out. I don't think it's perfect by any means, but, you know, we put together a really solid stretch where we really needed those points. And we knew the situation we were in, let's just say 12, 15 games ago, where we needed a run like this to put ourselves in a good position to make the playoffs. So I think the guys have responded. We got, you know, I think 6 games left now, and we got to just keep that momentum going.
Well, if you can't win on the road, you don't win in the playoffs. That's it, bottom line. And for us to get in, you have to be able to win in another team's building. And I think our game's matured from the back end all the way out. And, you know, the trade deadline, we added some depth that has really helped us. But like I said, special teams have been great, and I think that's something that you need, especially on the road.
Well, you do need it on the road. And you know why you need it on the road? Because sometimes you're not going to have your best, and you've just got to find a way to bob and weave, navigate the waters, whatever cliche you want to use, because winning on the road is hard. And the Lightning found a way to do it yesterday. It wasn't pretty. I'll get into the conversation I had with Chief in the postgame. He was upset about the way the Lightning faltered a little bit defensively. I understand it. But you know what I care about?
We were willing to give him a pass, though.
Yeah.
When I signed off, you and I were willing to give him a little bit of a pass.
If anybody listens.
Chief draws the line in the sand, doesn't
he? And I appreciate that. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, you and I have discussed this before. I think, for me, a lot of times, it's about the outcome, not the process on the road. And I know that that's contradictory to like what some coaches will tell you, because typically your process, if you're doing it well, will lead to points. But sometimes the process gets out of whack and you just got to find a way to win. And I feel like that's what the playoffs are about. And I feel like that's like winning on the road is about. But we're going to talk about that for the next hour. I am Greg Linnelli, the radio voice of the Lightning. Dave Mishkin is my partner. Steve Versnick is the producer. This is going to be a fun show. The Lightning are winning. It's always fun when that happens. Big game on Saturday. We'll get into that as well against the Pittsburgh Penguins. But the Lightning find themselves not only, I think, safely in a playoff spot at this point, Dave. I think we can breathe a sigh of relief. And maybe you and I could have done that even a week ago. We saw the Lightning and where they were headed. And that separation with teams below them is exciting to see. But, you know, they are breathing down the necks of the Toronto Maple Leafs for third place in the Atlantic. And look, as long as you have stats and you're keeping track of points, the Lightning and Leafs aren't separated by much. We're going to talk about it. Now, whether you think the Lightning being in third place in the Atlantic or being the first wild card heading into the playoffs matters a ton, that's a fair point. We can debate it. But where we are right now, there's a very real distinct possibility that this Lightning team is going to find themselves in the top three in the Atlantic. What I also find interesting, look at the narrative around the National Hockey League right now. Typically, the media, if you listen to us, and I'm going to toot our own horn, partner, we're ahead of the curve on a lot of things. You'll start to see the national media talk about some things you and I are discussing, specifically when it's related to the Lightning. I don't fault the national media for it, but it is frustrating when they don't get it right. Pierre LeBrun, and I have to read through the whole article today in The Athletic, basically had a whole story on the Lightning saying, boy, things are changing. Watch out for the Lightning.
Not to throw shade at Pierre, and Pierre has a lot to cover, and Pierre does a great job covering the entire league, and I think usually his columns are spot on. Why do you think that this column is appearing now? Where were the Lightning just playing 2 nights ago? Toronto.
Well, that's a good point. And he typically does stories.
And he talked, I think, to the Toronto GM.
And rightfully so.
From the Toronto GM.
And rightfully so. And rightfully so. Should it take the Lightning playing in Toronto for the national media to wake up and talk about how good they've been instead of talking about the foolishness that was the Devils and Rangers having a line brawl to start the game? You and I, we know the answer to that question. This is one of the more interesting stories right now. It's one of the reasons why we think Nikita Kucherov should be the MVP based off of the slow start the Lightning had. And I was very critical of the Lightning And I think most people were that were watching this team halfway through the season saying, you know, look, they're just not, they're making these gaffes defensively. They're not getting the depth scoring. And all of a sudden, Julian Brisebois makes a trade. Andre Vasilevskiy gets healthy and Braden Point starts finding the back of the net. Oh, by the way, Dave, now all of a sudden, we're not talking about depth scoring being an issue. Health could be, and we'll get into that later because a couple of players got dinged yesterday. But look, Nick Paul is scoring. Duclair is scoring. Cirelli was scoring. And now you factor in, obviously, what you're seeing from the first line. Steven Stamkos is over 30 goals. All of a sudden, now you're looking at this Lightning team and saying, who wants to play this team in the first round?
Yeah. Well, the Lightning had their issues, the issues that you were just talking about, inconsistent play. But yes, inconsistent play was due to two main problem areas. And the one we have been talking about most of the year, and we've been talking about it in a negative sense when they've struggled, and in a positive sense when they've shown improvement, and that is goals against. So their goals against has come down. Now, last night was a little bit of an outlier in that they allowed four, but most of the games over the last month plus, they've held the other team to three or less. Detroit got four, but the Red Wings got their fourth goal into an empty net. It was really a three-goal game. It was a 2-2 game with, 2 minutes and 40 seconds left. Still, they allowed four in that game with an empty netter. They allowed four as they had a big lead and the Canadians made a push and made things interesting in the third period. And we can get into last night's game. But I think if you look at the body of their work over the course of the last month plus, or really since they made the deadline deals to get Duclair and Dumba, the Kings got four against them with an overtime win. Most of the other games, though, the goals against has been right where you want it to be. And it has gone hand in hand with how they've defended. Has there been a game or two where the goalie has had to do more than the Lightning would have liked? Yeah, that Florida game comes to mind when they got outshot 50-16, but that was really an outlier game. I think when we came out of that game, Greg, we said, let's make sure that this is the exception, not the rule, and that was the exception and has not been the rule. So they've gotten better defensively. The other area that was a problem area until basically the deadline or just before the deadline was their road record. And something you just talked about, Coop answered that question about success on the road. In their last 12 road games, the Lightning gone 10-1-1. So they went from 10-15-3 on the road to now 10-15-2 on the road to 20-16-3 on the road. So I think those two things have really helped. They've kept their goals against down and they're winning on the road. And usually if you can keep your goals against down, you're going to have success on the road. I mean, they kind of go hand in hand, right? So that's a really good sign. That's why the Lightning have gone on this run and moved to within 2 points of clinching a playoff spot while behind them, we can say, we said it on the air last night, now you got five teams vying for two spots. But fortunately for the Lightning, they pulled themselves out of that muck. They're above the muck. Those five teams battling for two spots are probably going to go right down to the wire here. But the Lightning don't have to worry about that. They just need 2 points, and they're in.
You're 100% right. They also win with their third-string goaltender on the road. And I don't care if it's against the Montreal Canadiens. I think you win. You've heard me say this. There are a couple of things I firmly believe in when it comes to the National Hockey League and winning games. And I think we have discussed, and I think sometimes they play out more times than not. I think when you win on the road with your backup goaltender, that's a big deal. I don't want to say that's stealing points, but certainly with your third-string goaltender, that's a big deal. Lightning were able to do that. Navigated the waters. Montreal pushed back. Also goes to my second point. Not going to play a full 60-minute game. Sometimes you're going to play a 20-minute game, Dave. The other 40 are a little hairy. Last night, I'm not saying it was in that mode, but certainly Montreal had some pushback.
The Lightning said afterwards, Stamkos said afterward, we played four good periods on the trip. I think they liked their second period in Toronto more than I did, but it was better. Like, that wasn't a good period. It was an okay period. But the first period in Toronto and the third period against the Canadiens were not great, to your point. They didn't play a full 60 in either game, but they navigated through it.
They did. And I think, I want to reiterate this point. There is something to be said for that. Playing a 60-minute game, when you hear coaches and players talk about it, that is strictly cliche talk. There is no doubt about it. It is impossible to do it. I've told you before, I've seen a couple of instances since I've been covering and watching hockey where a team has put something close to a 60-minute performance. The Lightning probably have had a couple over the years. Certainly, I think in high-pressure moments, big games where they've had to play well. But you're inevitably going to have a team that pushes back, even a team like the Montreal Canadiens. And some of that is fueled by the Lightning turning the puck over. But the other team still has to make you feel a little uncomfortable. And Montreal did that at times last night, but I really don't care about that. They were able to, again, build and let's talk about the positives, Dave. Build a big enough lead where they gave themselves some breathing room, that if they did have breakdowns, they were going to be able to overcome that. And again, I want to reiterate, with your third string goaltender, Kucherov continues to pick up points. Nick Paul, you know, this is, Dave, I don't know about you, but when Nick Paul's shooting the puck, doesn't he feel like a different player?
Yeah.
You've made this observation, and I kind of agree with it. I mean, there's Steven Stamkos, who I think is going to go down as having one of the more elite shots we've seen. That's evident by the amount of goals he's had. I think Kucherov's got an elite shot, and he's using it more this year. But you'd be hard-pressed to tell me that there are more players in the league who have a bigger, heavier shot than Nick Paul. Doesn't mean he's going to be a 50-goal scorer. I think your observation is correct. Maybe he tries to be a little too cute picking those corners. But when he gets it on net, Dave, he doesn't have to be perfect with where that puck's going. That's an encouraging sign.
It's almost like the goaltenders are surprised sometimes. I think Primo was a little surprised that shot got past him as quickly as it did. That one was high glove. The one he scored against Toronto was high stick or high blocker. Primo lifted his glove and it just zipped right over the glove and went to the top of the net.
For sure. And maybe that stems from him maybe not shooting as much, because goaltenders still are a little, oh, wow, that's a heavy shot. That being said, there's a lot of film out there. So I think anybody who watches the Lightning and they're scouting the Lightning can look at that and say, Nick Paul's got a really good shot. I honestly think the only blemish for me might have been the injuries last night, Dave.
Yeah.
And we don't know how that's going to play out. And I think at this point in the regular season, to me, that is priority number one, even more so than how they're playing. Because I think for me, yes, they need the X next to their team name. I understand that. They're going to the playoffs. I want them to be healthy. And that, and especially for a couple of guys who have been really good. And again, Cirelli, a little bit like Nick Paul, you feel like his offense has been picking up here recently.
Yeah, a couple nice assists last night, especially the one on the Stamkos goal, tic-tac-toe passing play.
For sure. And so to me, that is something I want to be cognizant of, more so than how they're playing moving forward. But I do want to open up to our audience. We are taping the show, but to you as well, partner, about just overall your general feel for that game yesterday. We don't have to dive too much into it. It's a last place team. The Lightning got 2 points. That's what they're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. I think the game tomorrow is going to be very interesting, and we can get into why, because of who they're playing, and probably more importantly, how they're playing, which has been a little bit different, maybe a lot different compared to the majority of the season.
Well, as far as last night's game is concerned, the Lightning had a sluggish start. They gave up 5 shots in the first, 2.5 minutes of the game when Armia scored. Armia scored at 2:37 on what was Montreal's 5th shot of the game, which doesn't always tell you everything, but in this case, I think it tells you that the Canadiens had a lot of puck possession in the early minutes, and they were firing pucks to the net. For the rest of the period, the Canadiens only had 3 shots on net. Now, they had a couple of chances that missed the net. I'm not saying the Lightning dominated the rest of the first period, but the Lightning were able to stem that early push from Montreal, and they ended up grabbing the lead. They got a power play goal from Paul on a rebound, and then Asimov makes a really nice play down the wing where he beat the defenseman, Struble, knifed in front and chipped it in. So it's 2-1 Lightning after 1 in what was a fairly evenly played first period, I would say. I mean, shots were 8-8. Canadians had an advantage in attempts of 19-13. Some of those early attempts helped them, I think, get that advantage. It was in the second period that the Lightning took over the game. And we've seen this in the second period before. It's the period of the long change from the defensive zone to your bench. And there was a stretch actually before Armia scored his second goal to tie the game at 2. The Lightning pinned the Canadians back for probably close to 2 minutes. I know Matheson was one defenseman. I think it was Matheson and Harris. I remember the Canadians lost Caden Gooley early in the game on a check from Kucherov, which frankly I was a little surprised they didn't call a penalty on Kucherov. They could have called boarding, but Gooley went face first into the glass, didn't return. That was early in the game. So the Canadians had to go the rest of the way with only five defensemen, and two of their defensemen just had a monster shift because they couldn't get off. Monster in terms of difficult. Couldn't get off the ice. We were starting to see the Lightning get into a groove, playing with the puck, red line in, red line in, red line in, not letting the Canadians get their tired players off the ice. They didn't score, and then Armia does score. So it's 2-2, but that didn't really slow up the Lightning. They firmly controlled the second period, and it wasn't long after Armia's tying goal that the Lightning got the lead back for good. That was the tic-tac-toe passing play I was talking about. DeHaan at the left point to Cirelli at the right circle. One touch to Stamp goes to the left circle, and he one times it in. Lightning go up 3-2. They get a break when an outlet from a Canadiens player hits off AC Mont's skate, comes to Nick Paul, and he scores that goal that we were just talking about, high glove. It's 4-2. They get a power play and score 6 seconds after the power play ends. Bounces off Primo's blocker and goes in for a Hagel goal. And then a late power play goal from Kucherov makes it 6-2. That was one of those plays where there's a puck battle along the boards and the Canadiens went for it. And what I mean is they basically went all or nothing to win that puck battle because they sent three of their penalty killers to the boards to try and win the puck. Rather than the other choice is just back off, let the Lightning get the puck, but stay in position. Once they lost the puck battle, Stamkos ends up coming up with it and tapping it to Point. Point and Kucherov have a 2-on-1 down low. And Point gives it to Kucherov, and he one times it in. So look, it was a choice the Canadiens made. They kind of came up snake eyes there because they didn't come up with the puck, and then their three penalty killers are out of position. So that was a magnificent second period for the Lightning. I know they took away a couple of shots when all was said and done, but the Lightning end up outshooting the Canadiens 20-6 in the second period. And it should have been probably a drama-free third period. And this is probably where Chief got upset. I heard Stamkos' quote after the game, Greg, and he said, you know, they pushed, but we kind of gave them a reason to push. And that's true. The Lightning didn't execute as well, and he said as much. Stamkos did. The first Montreal goal, the one that made it 6-3, I mean, that's a face-off win, a shot from the point, and Slavkovsky gets a tip. It's a pretty well-executed play. Maybe if you're the Lightning, you want to tie up Slavkovsky's stick. The Lightning have been guilty of plays like that at points this year where the other team has gotten a stick loose in a dangerous area to tip a puck in. It was the 6-4 goal that I think bothered me because the Lightning had the puck with really no pressure in the defensive zone and they fumbled it away. And the Suzuki line was out there, their most dangerous line, and they got an extra turn in the offensive zone as a result and Caulfield scores to make it 6-4. And then the Lightning take a post-whistle penalty. AC Mont goes after Jack Eye because I think he felt that Jack Eye knocked down Hagel. That wasn't the case. Hagel collided with Stamkos. So correctly so, AC Mont gets the extra minor, and that was where Tompkins stood on his head. From the point the Canadians made it 6-4 till the end of the game, Tompkins was outstanding. And I didn't see how many shots the Canadians finished with on that 5-on-4 power play, but they had several dangerous chances. And the Lightning just didn't play as well as they had earlier in the game. They had chances to get pucks down the ice during that kill. They didn't. Tompkins was really, really good. And then he continued to be good when the Canadians pulled Primo for a 6-on-5, which they did twice. Marty St. Louis pulled Primo kind of early, about 5 minutes were on the clock when he pulled him. And the Canadians couldn't score. And then Stamkos finishes it with an empty netter. So It was not a charge through the finish line type of game for the Lightning. But you know what was a charge through the finish line type of game? The game they had in Toronto the night before. So unlike Chief, I am willing to give them some slack, understanding kind of the score. It was 6-2. They were finishing the second half of a back-to-back, and we just haven't seen this sort of play from them in kind of lockdown situations recently. Now, if it continues down the home stretch in the regular season, they have a lead in the third period and they're sloppy and they allow the other team to gain momentum and rally,
right,
different story. This was a little bit of a one-off, though, so I'm willing to give them a pass. But if we're just looking at it objectively, they should have won that game 6-3 at worst.
Yeah, yeah, and I get that. And if it's played on paper, Dave, the Lightning are going to win most games and they're going to win comfortably. But if you kind of take a look at where the league is with all the parity in today's game, you also understand that every game's not going to be perfect. In fact, there's going to be more difficulties than you encounter than you would like. You shouldn't be overly concerned about a performance like that against the Montreal Canadiens, specifically when the Lightning have shown you over the last month or 5 weeks that things are starting to turn. And if they're starting to turn, you're entitled to have a bad game here and there. You don't want to make it a trend. And this is
why I wouldn't even call that a bad game. It wasn't a bad game. They were great in the second period, and they had a good push at the end of the first or after the early surge by the Canadians. But the third period, particularly the last probably 12 minutes or so, left a lot to be desired.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I just think it's we have to keep a perspective. And sometimes that's hard to do when you're in the moment. But I think you really have to do in a long season because so many things can change. And it's why we try to keep a level head when the Lightning were struggling early on. We were going to give them the benefit of the doubt that they were eventually going to figure it out. Is that a little bit of chance on our part? Sure. But there was enough evidence to suggest that this team was too good to continue to have these mistakes. And it doesn't mean they're a perfect team. Nobody is. Even the teams at the top have flaws. Just take a look at what's going on in the National Hockey League right now. I mean, there are some interesting storylines that are developing. And if you were to sit here and tell me, who do you think is the slam dunk favorite to win the Stanley Cup? You'd probably, if you asked 10 people, Dave, maybe got, you know, 5 or 6 different answers when it comes to that. So, I mean, teams are flawed. And that's going to create some uncomfortable scenarios throughout the season. I think eventually you just want to collect as many points as possible and hope that eventually you're healthy at the right time, and that your team is kind of trending in the right direction. I think the Lightning are answering both of those questions. Now, the injury part is something they can't control. And I think
I didn't see what happened to Sorelli either.
I didn't see it either. So, you know, I'm wondering, and did I read or hear Cooper's comments correctly after the game? I don't know if we want to even play them later today on the show.
It was like
something like
precautionary.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
So when you hear that, and look, John Cooper is pretty close to the vest, don't you think, when it comes to diving into injury situations? Most coaches are. But I think for him to come out and say that, at least he's hinting to us, we held him out because we just didn't want anything else to happen. We think he's going to be okay.
And Janot didn't play either.
He didn't.
So that's something else to monitor.
And,
as
you know,
get
listen,
ready for the game tomorrow.
Listen, if that's the thinking with John Cooper too, with players who maybe get dinged up and you hold them out, even though they probably could come back to play, I'm wondering, especially once they clinch a playoff spot later in the regular season towards the very end here, you can't sit 6 players, Dave, but maybe you sit 1 or 2.
Yeah, and it may change the Vasilevsky dynamic.
It could.
Did I mention on the show yesterday how the playoffs are now beginning that first weekend? I can't remember if I said that on air to you or off air, but I understand that the NHL changed the start date for the first round of the NHL playoffs.
When is it again?
So originally it was Monday the 22nd. And so I was saying, because the Lightning play the previous Monday, which would be what, the 15th against Buffalo, and then they play Toronto on the 17th. And I was saying Vasilevsky's definitely getting the game on the 17th because they don't want him to sit for a week. Playoffs may start for the Lightning on Tuesday the 23rd if the playoffs were beginning for all teams on the... Like, if the playoffs were beginning on the 22nd, the Lightning might be in a series that starts the second day, right? Well, now the playoffs are starting on the 20th, which is not a long turnaround time from the end of the regular season.
What day is that? That's a Saturday.
Saturday, yeah. So the end of the regular season is actually Thursday the 18th. The Lightning don't play, but some teams do, and some teams play on the 18th that will be in a playoff series. and we may not know the matchups.
So you're
it's
saying
a little curious why the league set the schedule up this way. Like, on the one hand, I understand why they didn't have the playoffs that weekend to start, because it's going to be basically less than 48 hours after the end of the regular season schedule.
Interesting.
But they don't want to surrender a weekend of television, right? Like, they just are, if they started on Monday, they would be giving up a weekend of playoff hockey on television. So I understand why they made it over the weekend. The Lightning don't play Thursday. So their season will end on Wednesday, the regular season. They may not know their opponent, though. But as it relates to Vasilevsky, maybe the dynamic changes. Like, if the Lightning, for example, happened to open on the 20th, maybe Vasi gets the 17th off, possibly.
So what you're saying is, and this is important for my purposes, partner, for planning, because my daughter has nationals for cheering. Yeah. They're either going to play Saturday or Sunday.
I don't know. I mean, look, it's possible they could start a series on Monday as well. I think they want the playoffs, though, to begin when TV can show the games on the weekend. By TV, I'm talking national.
How many games
partners
are on Thursday, too? How many games? There's a bunch on Wednesday, right? Because I was going to say, yeah. I wonder.
That I can look up.
I wonder.
But, like, I have some family stuff that weekend, too. My son is in a theater show, which my wife runs.
Yeah.
So I was like, the playoffs don't start till Monday. I'll be able to see the Friday show and presumably the Saturday show. It's like, not so fast, Kowalski. Let's see.
Because you'll be on the road.
There are 6 games on Thursday. Only 4 games on Wednesday.
Let me ask
you. Let's see who plays Thursday. So you have Seattle and Minnesota. They're both going to miss the playoffs.
Doesn't affect the Lightning.
Vancouver at Winnipeg.
Doesn't affect the
Lightning. Those teams are in the playoffs. These are all Western teams.
I'm thinking, like, teams the Lightning could potentially play too. Do any of them play on
Thursday?
They're
all Western games.
I'm wondering then. And
so the East will know the playoff matchups at the end of play on Wednesday. And even on Wednesday, there are only 2 games involving Eastern Conference teams, the Lightning and Leafs and Penguins and Islanders.
Well, that'll have some implications, too, because presumably Pittsburgh and the Islanders, you could make a case for fighting for a playoff spot.
But by the time the game of the 17th rolls around, maybe they're both eliminated, right? Like, maybe we know the 8 teams and maybe we know the matchups. Maybe we don't.
I'm wondering, for the Lightning's case, if we get word of who they play, even regardless of what's happening with Pittsburgh and the Islanders. Like, it's not public, but we know.
Right.
You know?
Well, the Pittsburgh Islander game, in all likelihood, would not affect what is happening with the Lightning. Because the Lightning, as a wild card team, would play a division winner. The Islanders and Penguins are not winning a division.
That is correct.
And as a third place team, the Lightning would be playing the second place team, which would be neither the Islanders nor the Penguins. But that game against Toronto could determine who finishes in third and who gets the wild card.
That is correct. Regardless, they're going to be starting on the road.
Yeah. So now that I've seen this, it seems to me more likely that, first of all, the Lightning will know who they're playing in the first round of the playoffs at the end of play on Wednesday. For sure they will.
Yeah.
And second of all, the games that would start on Saturday the 20th will involve Eastern Conference teams. There may not be a lot of games, but there'll be some. Yeah, that's what the league. That's what the league said. I confirmed that with Ryan Bellick earlier on the trip. So I wanted to bring that up. Look, the fans maybe are interested that the playoffs are starting that weekend.
I'm interested.
But as it relates to the goaltender rotation for the Lightning, if the Lightning are playing on Saturday the 20th, is it possible that Vasilevsky only gets one of those games the final week of the regular season?
Probably.
I think it's possible.
Probably.
Yeah.
I would.
They'll probably talk to him and see what he wants to do.
At Bolts Radio, if people want to get involved in the conversation on X, do we want to go to questions? Do we have anything else we want to discuss from that perspective?
Well, I'm just going to bring this up.
Go ahead.
And I think, I know you were in agreement with this, but I believe it. If the Pittsburgh Penguins get into the playoffs, Sidney Crosby should get votes for the Hart Trophy. I think if the Penguins get in, understanding Panarin's had a good year, Pasternak's had a good year, there are probably some other players that have had impactful seasons for their teams. I know Eric Erlandson has said that his son Kevin, our former broadcast assistant, feels Hellebuck should be in that conversation. I think that that's unlikely. Sorry, Kevin. I think if the Penguins get into the playoffs, most writers should have the five players that I'm about to mention as their five picks.
Go for
Nikita Kucherov, Nathan MacKinnon, Connor McDavid, Austin Matthews, Sidney Crosby. That's it.
And for the record, I know people, we go back and forth and we joke because of my background where I grew up with Pittsburgh. I have said I think Nikita Kucherov should win the MVP.
Yeah.
And I say
but
that
Crosby to, Crosby has had such an outsized impact on
I can't tell you
staying in the race.
Dave, it's been impressive. I mean, what Kucherov has done this year has been incredible. And the reason I give him the nod, not only stats don't lie, but this Lightning team was struggling. And he, along with, I think, pretty good goaltending early on, was able to keep his team and their head above water until everybody got their act together. Mm-hmm. And go back to the narrative when it came to the Tampa Bay Lightning. I don't care what you say, Dave, and you're going to have some commentators who say, oh, yeah, watch out for the Lightning. Those were the same people who earlier in the year were like, yeah, you know, Lightning, we're going to kind of see the fall of the Lightning. There were a lot of those people.
Yeah.
And if you believe that, what Kucherov has done should add more fuel to the fire to give him MVP votes, because now people are changing that narrative. I don't want to face the Lightning in the first round. Boy, that Kucherov, man. I actually saw something posted on Twitter via X. Is Kucherov the greatest Russian of all time? That's kind of where this narrative is going. And I think there was some metric with like points.
Yeah.
And like the top three were him, Malkin, and Ovechkin. I mean, look, you can make an argument that's how it's going to be when it's all said and done.
People have short memories, though, when they're forgetting some of those first Russians to come over.
They do.
I saw that graphic.
They were pretty good players.
That graphic was points per 60 minutes.
There you go. There you go. Thank you, Steve. And Steve saw that same thing. But look, Kucherov's going to go down as the if he stays healthy and he stays with the Lightning for most of his career, or if not all of his career, he's going to go down as the all-time points leader. And mm-hmm. he is, look, the way he accumulates points, I mean, Malkin, for as good as Evgeny Malkin has been, and if you look at Malkin's points per game to where how many games he's actually played, it's pretty impressive because he's missed some time due to injury. We know about Ovechkin and his goals, but if you actually look at Kucherov and the points he's put up during individual seasons, I think he already has more 100-point seasons than Malkin and Ovechkin.
Yeah.
And I think there is more room for that to grow. So do I think Kucherov will end up being the leading all-time scorer in Russian player history? Yeah, if he stays healthy, for sure. Where that puts him in terms of the best of all time for Russians, I mean, he's going to have a seat at the table because he's going to have the cups. And if he wins an MVP this year, I mean, he already has the best interview of all time with his shirt off saying number one BS. So, I think that's a very real distinct possibility. But I don't know where I was going with that. But I think
we were talking about Crosby, and you said you feel
Kucherov should win
the Hart Trophy.
Yeah.
But right. This argument that he has so many more points than the next closest guy, and the next closest guy is Braden Point, who has been hot and has been contributing important goals and key points. He had two assists last night, did Braden Point. I'm looking at the gap between Crosby and Malkin, who's second on Pittsburgh.
And it was Gensel for a while, but remember they traded him.
Okay. So Gensel is no longer listed on their scoring summary.
Correct.
But Crosby has 25 more points than Malkin. So it's not as big of a gap as Kucherov to Point, but that tells you a lot. And remember, Crosby doesn't have as many points as Kucherov.
No.
So in some ways it's more impressive than just the point differential, because Crosby is starting at a lower number, which means that the next closest guy has far fewer points. Malkin has far fewer points than Braden Point
That is correct. And Dave, let's the elephant in the room. He's 36 years old.
Yeah.
Look at the other guys. I mean, they're in their prime.
Yeah.
When you watch Crosby on Saturday, you're just, and you always do because you know the game. I mean, he just doesn't make a bad play. It's usually the right play at the right time. Mm-hmm. And the thing about Crosby, you look at his numbers, and it's 19 19 straight seasons of averaging a point per game, which ties Gretzky, it's consistently great. I mean, there's just, you're like some guys, like you actually look at Malkin's numbers, he's had like a few really tremendous years. And then he'll have like 73 points through 72 games, which is good. But like Crosby's at like 85, 90. I mean, look how many goals. He almost did 40 goals this year. He's going to pass Phil Esposito for 10th all time in scoring.
Crosby is like every other hockey player who's ever played the game. Not every decision he makes is the right one, and he never has a mistake-free season, let's say. He may have mistake-free games. He comes pretty close. This is what I've said about some other players, like Doughty. I was talking about Doughty, right? And Doughty plays a different position, and a mistake that Drew Doughty makes might have more serious implications because he plays defense as opposed to a forward who makes a mistake. But I think the comparison is a fair one, that if you look at the number of decisions that Crosby and Doughty make with and without the puck, the percentage of correct decisions relative to their overall decisions is very, very high.
Sure.
Like they are usually making the right play at the correct time. And in Crosby's instance, you are throwing in the wow factor, like the dazzle and the sizzle as well. So he's in the right place at the right time, but then he pulls a play out of his back pocket that creates an unreal scoring chance for a teammate. We see that with Kucherov, right? Crosby is just like, there's no soft underbelly to his game. Understanding that he's human, right? So, I mean, he makes mistakes just like everybody else. He's out on the ice when the other team scores sometimes. And sometimes maybe it's more his fault than his teammates' fault. But those are rare instances. He's as complete a hockey player
as you're going to find.
As there maybe has been in the history.
As the game is ever going to see. And I've said he's probably, for me, going to go down as one of the top five players of all time when you take a look at his numbers, if he keeps this production going. And he's a guy who could probably play
and
into his
40s. Missed time with injury. He missed half of the 10-11 season.
And that was prime Crosby. Bill Guerin, I remember when Crosby went down, if you look at his numbers, Bill Guerin made one of the more famous quotes. It was an assault on the National Hockey League, the way he was going. And then he gets that concussion. Remember, I mean, I don't know how many months he was dealing with that, but they could not find like the remedy to get him back on the ice.
Well, it's amazing because usually you get a concussion like that. Correct. Subsequent concussions cause problems more so for players who have had a bad concussion.
Crosby has
had other concussions, but they have not sidelined him the same way, which is great for him and great for the game. But yeah, it should be a very entertaining game tomorrow. And the Lightning, look, I'm going to say it plainly. This is one game where the Lightning are going to be facing a team with a much, much higher desperation level than they are going to have. They're going to have to manufacture the level of desperation that the Penguins are going to bring to the ice.
Josh Yoey, who covers the Penguins for The Athletic, observed yesterday after their win against the Capitals in kind of a methodical game where the Penguins were better from start to finish. He said, you know, Crosby left that locker room. There was really no smiling. It was like, on to the next game. Mm-hmm. We know we dug ourselves a hole, but let's rally around. There's a couple of things to keep an eye on for tomorrow's game that will help you for sure, but just our audience. So they're going with Nedeljkovic in net. And he's played the last eight games. He's been stout. The Penguins' goaltending, for the most part, has been pretty good this year. But when they were going through that phase, this was probably about a month ago when it looked pretty bleak. Their goaltending was faltering. And Jari was part of that. I don't know if he was playing poorly. They weren't getting the timely saves. Jari's been sick, and that's coincided with Nedeljkovic getting an opportunity to play, and Jari has not been able to get back in net. So keep an eye on that maybe for tomorrow. They're also playing two young defensemen on the back end right now, that really three, if you include Pio Joseph in that. And Ryan Graves, their big trade acquisition in the offseason, really has struggled this year. He's out with a concussion. I don't know if that coincides with them playing better, but he has not been able to find his game. They have three new defensemen who are young on the back end, Dave, and they feel like it's given them some life. More importantly, though, Yoey is saying the game against Washington, maybe for the first time in a while, Mike Sullivan actually adjusted his coaching style where they played more of a quote-unquote trapping game. If you've watched Pittsburgh over the years, what does Pittsburgh do? They pinch with their defensemen in the offensive zone. They play an up-tempo game. And the Lightning know this because when they've played him and Pittsburgh's been successful, Pittsburgh is really good when they've got the puck and not defending. I mean, kind of like the Lightning. He feels like last night was maybe one of the first indications that the Penguins changed their style because they have to.
Yeah.
And this is the way they're going to have to play. So some things to keep an eye on as well. Drew O'Connor's playing really well. Brian Rust is playing really well. But it's a team, I think, that it may be too late still. It is maybe finding their footing, partner. And also probably having your back against the wall, no margin of error, is going to force you to play a certain way too.
Well, they don't have many games left against the teams that they would need to catch, except they do play Detroit, and you figure Detroit's in the mix, and they had that last game against the Islanders. But they're going to have to move ahead of at least one team, right? Whether it's Washington or Philadelphia, and worry about the Islanders potentially catching them. So we'll see. I mean, they've given themselves a puncher's chance, and maybe a week ago or 2 weeks ago, it didn't seem that way. I'm looking at their game by game. So they are 4-0-1 in their last five. So they've got 9 out of 10 points, as we've seen the Flyers stumble, the Capitals stumble. Detroit is kind of, they stumbled, and now they're trying to right the ship. But, you know, the Lightning went on a tremendous run. So the Lightning are up to 93 points. Let's say one of these other teams, and there are two teams that are going to make the playoffs of the five that we talked about. But even if one of those teams had done something close to what the Lightning have done, they would have been out of reach. So the fact that we've had some teams that were in a more secure spot stumble, and some teams that were a little bit farther out of it string together some wins, the gap is closed. Those teams that have strung together some wins are the Islanders and the Penguins. The teams that have stumbled are the Capitals and the Flyers.
Flyers will be
Detroit had stumbled, right? Like they had lost the 8 of 9 in regulation and kind of trying to right the ship here.
Agreed. And the Flyers, I think, are one of the more fascinating teams to watch because nobody anticipated them being where they are now. And you wonder if they can hang on because it feels like they're holding on for dear life.
Yeah, they have a back-to-back this weekend. Huge couple of games for them.
Basil says, Greg, heading to Pittsburgh tomorrow. One observation. Everybody in Pittsburgh owns a Penguins and Steelers jersey, and they wear them everywhere, not just to games.
What about the Pirates?
He goes, this goes back to the Pirates. Just, you know, do you have a Willie Stargell Clemente jersey? Maybe. And he asks, does Greg still have his? Well, you know what's interesting? Fun fact, and partner, I think everybody who's listened to the show over the years understands, I don't wear jerseys. I'm not a jersey guy.
I've been critical. Disowned by your home.
I've been critical. Well, and I've been critical of people who do wear jerseys as a as an older grown up person wearing somebody else's name on your.
What about the jersey without a name on it? Just the replica jersey.
I guess that's because I think that's a little.
I think it's a good look at a game.
I like the hoodies. I like the team hoodies.
Yeah.
You know, I think those are a good look. But you know, that's me. But Basil, I have never been a jersey guy. In fact, I've never had a jersey.
I will tell you that the merchandise directors, is that the right way of putting it, around the NHL, want you to shut your yap.
Yeah.
Greg. And they are glad that you are in the minority among sports fans. Because a lot of sports fans like having the jerseys.
They're expensive.
Well, that's why the merchandise people like.
How much are they? How much do they run by now?
I enjoy wearing them.
Steve, how much do jerseys run now?
I think it's for sure 3 digits. I don't really wear
it's
jerseys
definitely three
either.
Digits, yeah.
Yeah.
Have you ever had a jersey?
More of you're getting the number and the name on there.
Have either of you had a jersey or do you own a jersey?
I've been given two jerseys. Two. Okay. Unrelated to anything happening with the Lightning. Twice on New Year's Eve, I was asked to introduce Bare Naked Ladies. Remember them?
It's been 1 week since you looked at me. Yeah,
they're Canadian, actually. So they came to...
I won't hold that against
them. At that time, it was the St. Pete Times Forum. But they came on December 31st, 2004, and they came on December 31st, 2005. And I was asked to introduce the band.
That is actually pretty cool.
They gave me a Lightning jersey each year. I had a black one and a white one of the old jersey. That was given to me, and I don't think I've worn it once since.
Would you think about selling it on eBay? Why not?
Yeah, that would probably...
That would probably go for something.
That would probably help pay for my kids' college education, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you got to think about these things.
An old Lightning jersey with my name on the back, and one says 04 and one says 05.
You know what you could do? You know what you could do? You could sell that and then throw in a copy of your book. Oh, this is what we call a segue.
Yeah, very nice.
Segue into your
book. I can assure you my book will not cost you three digits. Unless
but it'll
you
be part of it.
See,
look at, I think you could auction it off. It's like a bundle.
Mm-hmm.
You could have your book. You could have this.
I need
jersey.
To hire you as my marketing director.
Well, I am in PR.
Yes, you are in PR.
Do you want to plug the book?
Yeah. So on X today is the video. Now, if you've been to Lightning games recently before warmups, they've played this video on the scoreboard. And I'm very appreciative to John Franzone and Gabe Marte who put this thing together and put it on the scoreboard, but it's a little bit more of a deep dive into the story, which I think if you've listened to the show, you've probably heard some of it, but it details the story. It details kind of what I think about the story. It gives you the information on the website, the signing event that we have coming up on April 11th on Ford Thunder Alley, which I was asked to kind of pick a time. I'm like pregame, probably looking at about starting around 5 o'clock. And maybe going to 6:15. I do have to get to the press box in time for warmups, and you know we'll set up before 5. And if people are there and they want to get in line, I'm not going to stop anyone from getting in line. And yeah, we'll have copies of the book at the signing event, and I will be there to sign the book. But also, there will be copies available in the team store starting on the 11th. So people are like, "Well, where can I get it?" You can get it through the website and order it. blindsquirrelnovel.com, but at least to start, the team store has agreed to carry copies of it as well. So that's the starting point. And I spell all that out in the video. And at the end, I do mention, I think we maybe have talked about this as well, Greg. If we haven't, that's on me. I am donating a portion of the book's proceeds to Tampa Bay Thrives, which is a nonprofit in our area. They've done great work to strike the stigma surrounding mental health. There's a mental health component to the book. They were the organization that Pat Maroon donated funds to after he had that episode with Jack Edwards a couple of years ago. People remember the episode. They may not remember that Maroon donated quite a bit of money, actually, and raised money, I should say, and donated as well to Tampa Bay Thrives. And they were a community hero earlier this year, too. So that was something I felt was important. I wanted to do so. Yes, a portion of every book purchased will go to this nonprofit that's doing great work in our area.
Love that.
Yeah,
I can't wait to get a copy of the book. I'm gonna see.
You've been away. I got Steve a copy. But
I know.
Once you're back, I'll
be back the next home game. So I'm actually kind of.
I don't know how much time you're gonna actually have to read the thing, but
I'm up at weird hours now, as you know.
Yes,
a long time
that is
ago,
true.
But it's, you know, I'm up with.
But when you're up, you're working.
I'm tired,
right? You're
well. I'm doing everything.
Feeding or
I'm
changing
feeding,
diapers.
I'm burping. You know, it is what it is. I'm wandering around, and you know, but I may have time to read. You know, who the hell? I'll read Enzo, and I'll put him to sleep, in a good way.
So, if you want a little inside baseball on some of the things that I discovered on this whole process or throughout this whole process, so like. I finished writing the book in October of 2022.
Okay.
So it's on the website. I wrote the book. I wrote the entire novel in 3.5 months, which, and I'm not saying this to brag. It kind of blows my mind that I was able to do that. But that was the process that I needed to go through before I actually sat down to start writing, which was I needed to know the whole story.
Sure.
As opposed to just, well, I kind of know where this is going and I'll figure it out when I get there. That didn't work for me, which is why I probably stopped the first time around. So the second time around, I basically had the full story written in my head before I sat down to start writing it. And I had fleshed out some chapters, fleshed out some scenes. But that's how I was able to write it so quickly. So look, it's sitting in my computer in a Google Doc. Where do I go from here? I had no idea. What I did have, though, were contacts through different experiences, through school, post-school, sure. People I'd known who were either in the publishing industry or had written books. So I got an education on it. And what I found is for most people who are not going to self-publish, you have to find a literary agent. This is now. You know, 100 years ago, it worked differently. Maybe 70 years ago, it worked differently. Now, if you're going to get into a commercial publisher's wheelhouse, you need an agent to pave the way for you. So you have to find an agent. Well, there are a lot of agents out there, but they have to be interested in your work. It can be a novel, it can be nonfiction, whatever. So for an agent, it's a commitment. Like, it's a commitment, sure, of the agent's time, resource, energy. They have to really believe they can sell your book to a commercial publisher if they are going to represent you. And I ran into some headwind, and I don't think that it had anything to do with the quality of the story. At least I hope it didn't. As people read it, I guess I'll find out. But I got a lot of no's, and I think what I found was, and a couple of agents talked to me about it and said, you're just facing a headwind here. And the headwind was this. This is a novel. It's fiction. Most of the people who read fiction are female.
Interesting.
If you are a reader and you are male, you are more likely to read nonfiction. Now, I am different. I like reading both fiction and nonfiction. And there are a lot of men who just don't read, as opposed to maybe, I don't know, 50 years ago,
yeah,
20 years, sure, ago, whatever. This is what the industry is telling me. I believe the industry knows what they are talking about. So I have a book that is in a format that is consumed mostly by females, but it looks like a sports book. Who likes sports? Men. Now, I don't believe that. We have a lot of female hockey fans following the Lightning. There are a lot of females who love sports. This book is not a sports book, though. This is a different book that happens to have sports in it. But that nuance is going to be lost on someone who's just like, how can I make money on this book, right? And so I think that it became clear that for me to get this thing some oxygen, I needed to find a different path. And that was what I spent a lot of the 2022, 2023 season was me getting that education and understanding that I'm not going to be able to find a Random House or a Simon & Schuster to take this book because they don't believe that women are interested in a book that has sports in it, and sure, they don't believe that men are interested in reading fiction. I think that those are broad generalizations that are wrong, but they know their industry better than I do.
Yep.
This is the book that I have. So what am I going to do with it? Well, what I'm going to do with it is find a local publisher, which I did, get the thing formatted, get the thing edited, get the thing ready to go, and use the platform that I have through the Lightning to try and get it out there. And it will be out there, and people can choose if it's something that they want to read or not. I will tell you, Greg, I love the story. I love the story.
You should.
Maybe not everyone will. In fact, not everyone will. That comes with the territory. But I believe that some people will. And, you know, I need to have people have the option to experience it, right?
Well, I will say this,
and this is the way the industry is right now. So if I was just continuing to bang my head against the wall, it never would have seen the light of day. And I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to wait anymore.
Couple of observations. One.
Yeah, I'm curious to get your take on that. I'm not sure about, if you knew any of that stuff.
No, I didn't. But I mean, you and I have talked about the journey a little bit, and I would ask you questions about, like, who did you contact? Where do you go? You actually now have an incredible knowledge of the process. So if you were to do it again, just think about how much less time you would be doing or using finding where to go. You almost could write a book on how to publish a book.
Yeah, well.
Honestly, I think that would actually be pretty interesting.
Do you want to bang your head against the wall?
But like it's almost like a guide, because people like real life experiences. And I got to tell you, there are a lot of people, Dave, who I think want to write a book. I actually, and this is the first time I spoke about it, have started, this was like a couple years ago, during the pandemic, I would often talk to my wife and say, you know, the art of tipping. Does anybody know what the appropriate amount of tipping is in today's world?
Yeah.
Everybody's asking about
tipping. It's expanded beyond.
It has. I actually started to jot some stuff down and write. And actually got to the point where I was making phone calls talking to different venues about their experiences. But it takes a lot of time and it takes a lot of focus. And I think that's what you have. And I think it would be really interesting to hear that put down in some sort of book, the art of writing a book, the process. Yeah. You have that now. You also, I think, through this journey, probably didn't realize, and now you do, how many connections you've made.
Mm-hmm.
People you could talk to. Who could at least, I mean, you were talking to me about some of your classmates at Yale who are now maybe in the media that were giving you advice.
Yeah. So one of my classmates at Yale, so the way Yale works is in terms of where you live, undergraduates are placed in one of now 14, but at the time I was there, 12 residential colleges. So you live in your college has a dining hall, but it's not geared toward a specific area of study. It's just random, right? But it gives you a smaller community within the campus. So this classmate of mine was in my college in my year. We lived on the same floor freshman year. We knew each other through the 4 years. You know, he wasn't one of my close friends, but I knew him pretty well. So he has gone on to be a pretty prominent editor at, we'll call it, a major newspaper, a national newspaper. I'm not going to tell you which newspaper, but I mean, if I said it, you would know it. So I reach out to him and I'm like, hey, because he's been involved in some books, nonfiction books, political books.
I've heard this guy before. I mentioned this guy.
You had heard of him. Yeah, you had heard of him. So I reached out to him and I'm like, hey, so I wrote this novel. Like, what is your recommendation on like how to get this thing some oxygen? And he said, well, send it to me and, you know, I'll take a look at it and give you my opinion. And what his opinion was, he's like, you're probably going to have a hard time some of the stuff that I just spelled out. He's like, you're probably going to have a hard time finding a commercial publisher to take the risk. That's really what it's about. It's about risk, right? Like, are you willing to put your cards and your chips on the table and invest in something that structurally doesn't fit into the box of what we have seen can make us money? He's like, I got to tell you, though, I don't know how many of my reporters have gotten that commercial publishing deal and they feel they've hit the big time only to find out that basically they get very little to no support and they have to market the whole thing themselves. And I'm like, market the whole thing themselves? I'm like, I'm planning to do that anyway. Like, that's no problem for me. I'll talk about this book until I'm blue in the face, right? And like, I'm in broadcasting. I'm happy to talk about this thing that I've created. And I was planning to do it anyway. So I'm like, after talking to this guy, I'm like, why am I trying to turn myself into a pretzel to make somebody feel that this book is viable only to have to do all the work myself? And he might have been overstating it. But I'm like, I believe in the book and I believe people will like the book. So I'm done. I'm not going to waste any more time trying to convince one person that this is worthwhile. I'm going to get it out there and see if a lot of people feel that it's worthwhile enough to spend a few bucks, not three digits, as we talked about. Paperback's retailing for $17.95. Kindle or ebook is about half that price. And, you know, see if they're willing to make that investment. And if they do and they like it, they'll tell their friends about it. So it was a really enlightening conversation. I know I shared that with you because you had heard of him, right? And I'm like, yeah, we knew each other when we were 18. But he gave me, it was after that conversation that it really crystallized for me to go a different route and find some support locally. Really high. I went with St. Petersburg Press, really happy with the experience working with them. And look, I think that it came out looking fine. Like, except for the fact that it doesn't say Random House or Simon and Schuster or Harper Collins on the back. Yeah, I mean, it looks just like any other book that you would see from those commercial publishers. So
I love it.
Little inside baseball for you and for the fans.
For sure. It's tremendous. And I'm happy for you because I think that's such a big, big accomplishment. And you should feel proud of the work. And I think it's going to be an easy read because when I read your work on the Lightning's website, it's detailed, but you can follow it.
Yeah.
You have a way with words where it's simple, but impactful, and it should make for an easy read. I'm looking forward to it. I know Enzo is, and we're going to have a fun time.
You can read him. You can read him to sleep. That's what you can
do. It'll be great.
Well, the last thing I'll say, because in this clip that I did for Franzone, and it not just for Franzone recorded it, Gabe recorded it with Franzone, but when I was talking about the book, one of the things that I said was that it's an accessible story, and it is an accessible story. And what I meant by that and mean by that is that the hockey stuff in there has an authenticity to it, but I wrote it in a way that if you don't know the first thing about hockey, it's okay. I'm going to lead you along. So when you get to that kind of into the weeds of the hockey, you're going to understand what's happening. So you don't need to know a lot or even like a lot about hockey or sports to be able to enjoy the book. But to your point, it's accessible in a different way too. It is not dense. I intentionally wrote the book so that the prose is crisp and clear and flows. And I think that's probably my writing style anyway, which you just talked about relating to some of the stuff I produce for the Lightning. But even to the point, Greg, that if I was writing a sentence and I felt that the sentence was getting a little too convoluted, I would stop and I would actually say to myself, simplify this. And maybe I'd break the thought into two sentences or sometimes even three sentences to make them shorter so that they were crisp and clear. And that's the way the book was written. So for people who maybe aren't enthusiastic readers or they're like, I don't want to read something that's going to make me like have to reread the sentence 2, 3, 4 times. This is not that book.
I can't wait. I can't wait to read it. And I can't wait to see you guys when I get back.
Yes.
You are
released from home duty home for the next duty. Home game, right?
That's right. So it should
next
be
next Tuesday. You're going to be in the press box.
It'll be fun. And we look forward to it. We look forward to talking tomorrow before the game, Pittsburgh and Tampa Bay, 12:30 pregame, 1:00, the puck drops. Make sure you stay tuned for that. And then Mish and I will be on the airwaves in this setting, noon to one on Monday, recapping what we saw. Partner, great job this week. And I will talk to you tomorrow. You will be in my hometown.
That is true.
And that'll be
and
a lot
we'll
of fun.
Do power lunch on Monday.
You got it. All right. Thank you to Dave Michigan. Thanks to Steve Ersnick. Thanks to you for listening. I am Greg Linnelli. You've been listening to Power Lunch on Lightning Radio.